I'm going to introduce our subject expert panel. From architecture, Doug Voigt, who you've heard from, and Jennifer Scolin from Skidmore, Owens & Merrill. On open space, Sarah Wiedner, who you've heard from, and Carly Moulter from James Corner Field Operations. For traffic, Lue Abuna from KLOA. Environmental and civil engineering, Keith Oswald and Laura Schaefer from V3. Economic impact, Nick Allen from HRNA. And a couple of my partners from Sterling Bay, Andy, Dean Marks, and Fred Kroll. So in a few minutes here, we'll open the floor to questions. We ask that you utilize the two mics there to the left and right. We know there are a lot of folks that want to ask questions. We hope we can have a polite and respectful discussion and allow as many people to speak as possible. If you wouldn't mind introducing yourself prior to your question, we'll go back and forth between the microphones. If you're not able to make it to a microphone, please raise your hand and we'll have somebody bring a mic over to you. For further, I think we neglected to note, I know for some of the slides it was tough to read specific items, numbers, and so we'll be posting this on Lincoln, on our website, lincolnyards.com. I imagine the alderman will be posting it on his website. So it'll be there. There will also be places to submit further questions. So let's get into it. And again, if you could just give us your name when you ask your question, please.
Hi. My name is Randy Jacobson. And I live in Chicago for 20 years. I live in the 43rd Ward. I would like to see the developers stop the fiction by saying that either the taxpayers of Chicago are not on the hook for the infrastructure or continuing to trip over the phrase publicly accessible open space. Okay. Thank you. Any development of this scale is going to have a lot of publicly accessible open space, whether or not there is a regional park included or not. And I, for one, don't believe that Sterling Bay should be on the hook for the entire cost or provision of a regional park in the North Branch Corridor. But as a developer who wants to go first, it behooves you to organize the other property owners and developers to figure out how to provide that park, you know, as a whole and not broken up into a field here and a field there. Because I don't think your project is going to be able to proceed, or at least these people aren't going to want you to do it, until you solve that problem. And with all the talent up there on the stage, I would hope that that problem could be solved. Now, you also mentioned that you offered some of the publicly accessible open space to the city of Chicago as a park to deed it to them, but the city did not want to take it because they couldn't afford the upkeep. And I was wondering, when you were showing us all those spaces, who was going to pay to, you know, to plant it every year and make it, keep it that beautiful. And the problem, the reason the city doesn't have the money to upkeep the park is because almost 50% of the land area in the city of Chicago, including the most valuable parts of the city, are in TIF districts, and the property taxes are being diverted from the general fund, which is the part of the money that funds the park district, you know, into things like infrastructure improvements that we need, but that will primarily benefit the property owners and your customers and your development. So my experience in development is that the only cities who pay for public infrastructure for developers are cities that are insolvent. And we're pretty much insolvent. And we need those property tax dollars. We need them for the general fund. We need them for the schools. And they shouldn't be going into a slush fund for the mayor. Now, thank you. I read today that the Goose Island TIF, there is legislation in Springfield to extend that TIF for another 13 years. So it looks like all of the new property taxes in the North Branch Corridor are going to be locked up in the North Branch Corridor for the next 23, maybe 39 years. So,
sir, I'm happy that you can continue going. With our land, frankly.
How much of the land area in the North Branch Corridor is not in a TIF, and how much of the land area in the North Branch Corridor is going to start contributing to property taxes to the city of Chicago, to the general fund, and the schools, and the parks, you know, for the whole city, okay, for the whole city, not just for this, not just for where your customers are going to be? How much is, like, not in a TIF already?
You're asking me a question about the entire city. I don't know the answer to
that. I'm asking you a question about the North Branch Corridor redevelopment plan. How much of the property in that plan is not either in a TIF, planned to be in a TIF, or in an existing TIF that's planned to be extended? Because, look, we are told, the people around these projects, we're told the city has to build these projects to expand the tax base because we need to pay the pensions, right? We need to pay all our bills. And then we find out when we take what is literally the crown jewel of undeveloped property in Chicago, and the other one is, you know, the 78, and we're being told we're not going to get any property taxes for 23 years. And then if it gets extended, it could be, you know, who knows how long. So the incremental property taxes, you know, needs to go. Why don't you just, you know, configure your development, go back to the property owners, tell them you'll give them less money for the money because the people of Chicago aren't going to give you the tax money to build the infrastructure that you need, because traffic, when this is built, is going to be worse than it is now. Okay, I mean, I don't think anybody thinks that if you drop, 12 million square feet of new development in a place and you build a couple of bridges, that it's going to get better. I mean, it's not going to get better. I mean, this will help mitigate some of the negative impacts, but it's not going to make it better.
So, all right. The question was about the entire North Branch,
is there any land left in the North Branch Corridor that is not going to be in a TIF?
I don't think that that's a question for this project team on this project. You're asking a question about the entire North Branch Corridor, sir.
All right. Okay. I mean, so I guess what you guys will tell us, the general fund, the school district, is not going to see a penny of new tax dollars for 23 years unless it's extended. And then, you know what? By the time the TIF is finished, you know, the city's going to be on the hook for the maintenance of it. You know, we got to pay for the fire department. We got to pay for the police and the schools. And we were told at the last meeting there's going to be a waterfall of trickle-down taxes. So do we know how big that waterfall is going to be? Is it going to be a gusher? Or is it going to be like a little dried-up, you know, riverbed in California? I mean, because we need the taxes. That's why we're letting you do it, for the taxes. Thank you.
Okay. Sir?
My name's Gomez. I am the owner of Subterranean and Bee Kitchen, an independently owned clubs. And then please continue the applause. How many here are in support of independently owned venues that bring us the entertainment? Right? Thank you. Thank you for that. This is important to us. I've been trying to get some clarity. At the first meeting I went to, I was told, when I asked the question, the person who was in charge of the entire project said to me, well, that question is above my pay grade. So I'm going straight to Adam on this one, because I'm assuming his pay grade is sufficient for this. Am I right? So What have you promised Live Nation? What is being built? What is this entertainment district all about? Can we start with that question so we can get some clarity and some answers to what we're up against?
Those mics aren't working. I'm Dean Marks. I'm a principal and general counsel of Sterling Bay. Thank you for your question. So Live Nation's development there is completely yet to be determined, candidly. What they have agreed to and are interested in doing is investing tens of millions of dollars to develop that amphitheater that you see in the southeast corner. Okay, you're entitled to your opinion. And several other bars or venues where they would own and operate those venues. Okay. Does that answer your question?
So you sold out. You didn't reach any of us that are independent operators, and you sold out to Live Nation so that they can build on your property. Just for clarity, is that wrong? Is there something wrong with that statement?
That's not how we would view it at all, but you're, of course, entitled to that opinion.
So how many venues? What has been promised?
That has not been determined, and there is no promise there. They have committed to make a significant investment in the development.
What's that investment?
And to the extent that you brought us a proposal, okay, that is an interesting and viable proposal, we absolutely would entertain that.
So, Alderman, we're talking about TIF dollars to build the roads so people can go to Live Nation's properties to go enjoy what they're going to build. Is that what I'm understanding?
That's not accurate either, candidly.
How is that not accurate?
The TIF dollars go to the public improvements for the roads and other infrastructure
What was inaccurate about what I said?
For people to get access over the river to your venue, okay, to make it easier for them to cross the river all over the place. It's just how it is. That's not specific to Live Nation's development there or venue there.
Well, it certainly contributes and gives access to their venues, correct or incorrect?
It gives access to the entire development and unlocks the congestion in the entire area.
Interesting. So when we're talking about traffic and we're talking about the concerts that are happening, we have a concert going on in this minor league soccer field. I'm amusing you with this question.
Yeah.
So we have concerts going on in the soccer field. We have, I don't know how many venues. 2 to 5 is what they said would be in their entertainment district.
Correct.
That's all we have information from 200 or 100 up to 3,000 or 6,000. Very nebulous, a little bit convenient. And that the traffic you're talking about with these side roads is supposed to be sufficient when all of those concerts are happening.
The traffic mitigation study that we've done for the stadium and the venues indicates that the new grid and the new improvements are more than sufficient.
Okay, what point is it reasonable to expect answers to these questions on what this entertainment district is going to be? It seems to be, I couldn't follow that little red thing on what he was talking about, but it looked like a significant piece of land.
We would love to sit down and meet with you and talk more about it candidly. The development
Just talk about it candidly here.
No, we need
their voices in this
candidly,
too.
Like everything else in the development, we are figuring it out and trying to pin down exactly what we can do there with them that will work from a market and development standpoint.
Doesn't it seem to you a reasonable request is figure it out first, then ask for TIF dollars?
No.
Alderman, figure it out first. Tell us what you intend to do very specifically before you start hitting us up for support from our tax dollars.
You see a plan for a building up there, okay? Am I able to build that building today? I'm not, because I don't have a tenant to occupy that building.
But it's a plan. I am asking that you finish the plan, then ask for tax dollars.
Okay.
That is a reasonable request.
Finish your park plan. Okay. So I appreciate your comment, and thank you. Thank you for your interest. I appreciate
it. Okay, so when will we have answers to – when will we have a plan?
You're welcome to have a dialogue with us directly at any time. Okay. So it's not – everything that we've told you is everything that we have to discuss right now. I don't know what else you want me to say. Thanks.
Alderman, can we talk about it then? I'm going to hold you to that.
Are we going to be respectful to each other as neighbors? Okay.
Ma'am.
Hi, Keating. Kate McCarter.
Hi, Kate.
How are you?
Great, thanks.
Old neighbors. My name is Kate McCarter. I live in the Second Ward. Look at how many people are here tonight. Not everybody could even get in. There are 40 to 50 people out in the lobby. The mobilization of Chicagoans in connection with this project is a function of Sterling Bay's lack of transparency. You have delayed, you have evaded, you have played PR games. I mean this honestly. But we have shown up to reclaim our city. The problem began with what's officially titled Mayor Emanuel's Industrial Corridor Modernization Initiative. No, it's not the city of Chicago. It's Mayor Emanuel's. It initiated the rezoning of planned manufacturing districts throughout the city. It's about who's pushing through this project. I urge the rest of the city to pay attention to the reframing of what are called framework plans in the remainder of the planned manufacturing districts. They comprise 12% of the land mass of our city, and they're in many rapidly gentrifying areas along the river, Little Village, Pilsen, Bridgeport. The framework plan covers a huge tract of 760 acres, hugging the Chicago River, as you know, from Grand north to Fullerton. It didn't have the parkland when it hosted primarily heavy industry, but now it's going to be filled with offices and residences. The Lincoln Yards project, with an actual estimate, which is veritable based on your square footage that you're asking for, 50 to 70,000 people. I think what we're talking about is the 20,000 stadium is part of what informs that. The 7,500, the second tier Live Nation venue, in total 5 to 7 as someone wanted an answer about. There are so many city policy documents that recognize the necessity of publicly owned parkland, starting from the 1909 Burnham Plan to 1998 City Space to Great River Chicago, written just a couple years ago. It's the city that we recognize. Make no little plans. They've no magic to stir men's blood. It's landscape architect Jens Jensen, who was so formative in what defines Chicago's landscape. We all need the living green or we'll shrivel up inside. But when Sterling Bay entered the process and flew the bid for Amazon, the community was frozen out of the process. I was struck, Keating, when I read in Cranes this week, that you said, we think we're addressing concerns raised by the 24 community groups and more than 100 individuals the developer met with in recent months to gather feedback, in addition to providing much needed infrastructure that is going to help with existing condition in the neighborhoods, end quote. But this is what actually happened. After the framework plan passed, Alderman Hopkins appointed a committee of the heads of the neighborhood groups to meet with the North Branch Corridor developers. But it was a committee in name only, stymied from open dialogue. In June, that committee had to turn to the Sun-Times to publish an open letter. Why is there no real dialogue about the mega project on the North Branch of the Chicago River? Sheffield Neighborhood Association President Jim Gramada penned a letter, "Hey, Lincoln Yards, when can we talk?" On July 18th, when Sterling Bay refused to take public questions, when they made us stand in line at 5 tables behind 20 people waiting for 10 minutes to get non-answers, reporters were also dissuaded from hearing those conversations. We were told that Sterling Bay would meet with community groups shortly before another large meeting soon to follow. But instead, Sterling Bay did not meet with the membership of the established community organizations. The SNA conducted a comprehensive survey of 880 people. They crunched numbers. We all asked specific questions. We were told that we would receive answers from Sterling Bay. No one responded. There has not been transparency. To conclude, there are so many problems with this project. Long conclusion. But I'm here to advocate for one aspect, which was sadly overlooked. We need a publicly owned park. Surrounding neighborhoods have needed the park space for years, but this urban infill will bring 50 to 70,000 people in the area. If North Avenue to Webster is built out to its potential build, it would be 118,000 people. Get that, 118,000 people. This manner of POPOS, P-O-P-O-S, so problematic that it has its own acronym, is that it's publicly owned, privately accessible space. Blair Kamen penned an article on October 18th saying, City Front Center, a cautionary tale. He specifically called out the 78 and Sterling Bay's Lincoln Yards, saying if the DPD doesn't have teeth behind their requirements, if they're not, even if there are ordinances, people can be locked out of their what's supposed to be publicly accessible space. The river belongs to all of us, but we need to be able to access it. General Iron plans to relocate by 2020. It's the last area of accessible land. We need to talk about this. Andy Glore opened the meeting by letting us know that this is not about a park, but it is. This meeting is about transparency, it is about privatization and monopolization, and it is about a park. Thank you.
Thank you.
So I would just note for you, if the folks in this room if you can advocate for the city to take over this parkland, we will gladly hand it over to the city. They're going to have to be able to pay for it, but. Ma'am?
My name is Rita Kay, and I am president of Ranch Triangle, which is a neighborhood group in Lincoln Park. My first comment is to Alderman Hopkins. I want to just clarify that I didn't appreciate you reframing the issue about the no questions in the original meeting. People weren't frustrated because they didn't want to just complain or oppose. They wanted to ask questions so everyone could hear the questions and everyone could hear the answers. That's how we exchange information and people understand the issues, especially when there's multiple communities involved. People in Bucktown and Wicker Park may have different questions and issues. Obviously, there's other interests, including the music venues, and none of us would have known that unless they spoke up at the last TIF meeting. So I just want to clarify, the open questions is important because it's an important exchange of ideas and information. I'm wondering why we're not seeing the master plan. From my understanding, and I'm not a professional, but this doesn't qualify as a master plan. I pulled up the DPD's manual, and the things that are just required just for you to sit down prior to filing are to include a 3D massing image from a pedestrian bird's eye view, floor plans, unit mix. You're supposed to have... if it includes residential, which this does, you're supposed to have an analysis of unit sizes, number of bedrooms and units, square footage projections. You're also supposed to have details regarding neighborhood CPS elementary and high schools, including school information, location, capacity, ability to enroll additional students, and any expansion plans. These are just some of them. Some of them I don't understand. I believe some of the things they ask for include traffic studies, environmental impact, which I assume is you have because we've been told you've begun remediation. So I assume you've had some environmental studies done in order to get the permits to begin doing that. But I'm wondering why we didn't get the master plan. I'm also wondering why we were promised copies of the plans before this meeting, and they were not provided to the community just so we could understand what we were seeing rather than just react after a presentation. And I think that's a lot of the frustration that I've experienced. So to the extent, you know, I ask a question during the presentation, it's honestly because the frustration of some of it hearing the same information again, and then some of it not, the expectation was that there would be a master plan. And then finally, I would just like to point out, and again, I'm not a zoning attorney, but why does paragraph 12 of Sterling Bay's plan development proposal state that it can be modified by the zoning administrator? What does this do for any promises that have been made to the community about building height, about, you know, what? I mean, we haven't seen the master plan, but as far as what we've seen and about how many feet tall the buildings are, does that make these kind of statements and promises illusory? And then I just want to say one more, and I don't think the community should agree to that, and I don't even know why Alderman Hopkins and the city would even permit that to be in the plan, because that takes the community out of the decision-making about a lot of the things we've come here tonight just to understand. I think it's disappointing that if you were going to give parkland to the city, that the city didn't accept it. I am in favor of the North Branch Park and Preserve, and I think it's a necessity because this is, you have more land beyond than what you're showing, and there's more land within this area that is shown and being considered, and which is, your plan makes up about a third of the property in the North Branch area that we're talking about. So there's 150 acres, not just 56. So that impacts, obviously, traffic congestion, the number of people. So I don't know what your traffic studies cover, if it's only the 56 acres or if it's all of it. But we've already seen plans for Webster Square to increase. We've already seen Triangle Square. We know there's other developments around. So why the city wouldn't accept a gift, I don't understand. And that's certainly, I would think, would be something you'd want to ask the community, but also I think it emphasizes the fact that we need the North Branch Park and Preserve, and that the city really needs to get behind providing park space to the public. Thank you.
Thank you. Excuse me. So, do we, as far as the master plan versus what we've shown, Fred?
Sure. I mean, we've provided initial detail on phase one that includes site plan, that includes that will have building elevations, that will have heights and uses prescribed. And the plan development itself will serve as a master plan. And as we move forward through the process, individual sites will come in for approval, and they will be reviewed by CDOT and the city. And there will be an ongoing process.
This presentation will be posted either tonight or tomorrow morning. The complete presentation. This is the master plan in its current condition. There are numbers in here for that, as far as the density, as far as number of units, office space, anticipated number of residents. But the numbers are harder to see, obviously, on the big screen sitting here. We're going to post this tonight, and there's going to be an opportunity to submit questions further, both to the alderman and to on our website. And I would say that I personally have been in a number of our meetings with the community groups. So those of you that have been in those meetings from the community groups, if you could acknowledge that, you know, when you do ask a question, that we have met, that would be appreciated.
Hello, I'm a 10-year resident of Branch Triangle, and as many of you who live in the neighborhood may know, the CTA capacity in the area is tremendously strained. Taking the Brown Line from Armitage to the Loop in the morning is a stressful experience at best, and when the trains get backed up, it can be nearly impossible to get on the train. That's at current levels of population in this neighborhood, and I really struggle to see how capacity on the Brown Lines, Purple Lines, and Red Lines would not be severely impacted by this development. Additionally, I don't know if you've ever had the experience of taking the 72 East, but that can be one of the worst Chicago experiences in the summer. I've been to two of these presentations, and there's been substantial discussion about streets and traffic, and that's great, but I don't have a car, and many people who live in this area don't have a car. I really came up here in good faith to ask you to tell us more about what your plans are. I know there's been a talk about the water taxi. I take the water taxi often in the summer. It is a delight. It is not a real solution for this type of neighborhood. So I was hoping you could expound more, and I really wanted to advocate additionally for the Clybourne bus and for the Elston bus, because I just don't understand how transportation needs will be met without those.
Thank you. Just anecdotally, because I'm not a city transportation expert, but I do know that part of the effort for the transitway was to alleviate some of the pressure on existing city transit, as well as, and I think, I don't know if we showed one or two cross-sections of one of the streets. If not, we'll make sure that those are in the presentation that's posted. But in our conversations with the city has gone to great lengths, and that's us to go to great lengths, to make sure that buses, bus lanes, and transportation lanes are accommodated to ease the transportation for buses specifically, as well as bikes, as well as pedestrians and cars. So I'm not an expert on the topic, but I know that the city is focused on that and has been going to great lengths to improve the bus transit.
Well, thank you for your response, and I really encourage you to provide more details specifically on the Brown Line in your next communication. Thank you.
Hi, Alan.
Good evening. My name is Alan Mellis, a Lincoln Park community leader for over 40 years, a member of Alderman Hopkins' Lincoln Yards Community Advisory Committee, and president of Friends of Optimal Transportation, or FOOT, Lincoln Yards. First, I'd like to thank Alderman Hopkins for sponsoring this meeting and inviting the community to ask questions and provide their comments. As I've said in the past, I would like to see a successful Lincoln Yards development as long as it does not negatively impact our local communities by making our traffic congestion even worse, overloading our existing parks, and taxing the capacity of the local public schools. The many leaders of surrounding communities have heard other developers propose a hypothetical, overly dense plan, and then when the community had concerns, tweaked the plan to what they were actually intending to propose. This will not work. As reported, this new proposal is still a downtown development, and even if your model wasn't accurate, it really points that out, as Paris Schutz said last night on WTTW, with the same density as before. So the height of the buildings is not my concern, it's the density. In addition to questions I've submitted in writing, and I have another copy for you, about 20 questions which I didn't want to go into tonight, or the questions that the Lincoln Yards Community Advisory Committee gave to you in July that Erin promised me she was working on. We still haven't seen answers to those questions. Let me just ask two questions, and they'll be actually questions, and you can answer yes or no. But I added a third one because of what I heard. In the Sheffield Neighbors Lincoln Yard survey, the number one concern was congestion mitigation and traffic impact. Will Sterling Bay agree to pay for an independent traffic consultant selected by the City of Chicago Department of Transportation to determine the overall impact of your development on traffic congestion, including what they would recommend for solutions?
So, Alan, the traffic study that we did commission is under review by the city today.
I know.
And so I just can't answer that until we receive feedback from the city.
I asked a simple question.
It's very likely that they're going to require us to do that anyway. So we've been working with the city closely to try and handle a bunch of these things, like the traffic mitigation and rerouting streets and us dedicating streets back.
I'll repeat the question. Will Sterling Bay agree to pay for an independent traffic consultant selected by the City of Chicago Department of Transportation to determine the overall impact of your development on traffic congestion, including recommended solutions?
Alan, I think it's certainly something that we should take under advisement, and we should see where everything shakes out with our conversation with the city.
My second question, open space. In the Sheffield Neighbors Lincoln Yard survey, the number three concern after the need for a master plan was open space and riverfront access. Since Sterling Bay is already committed to building the 606 extension, that was one of the big things that you presented at the very first meeting, will they support using that $100 million of TIF money to instead acquire land for the North Branch Park and Preserve. I didn't say
I don't want to say that's above my pay grade, but I do have to consult with my partners on that and take
it
into account.
I'm ready to listen.
Adam, how about you?
I guess I'm not. I try to
it's
make them simple.
It's tough to answer
simple,
right
yes
now.
Yes, no questions. Anyway, let me do my third one that I just added, and then I'll be done.
So, Alan, we're paying for and building 20 acres of open space.
All I asked you is you came to the community, and one of the selling points was you're going to connect the 606. You're going to do a 606 extension. In a presentation 2 weeks ago about the TIF at a $100 million price tag for something that I thought I heard from you that you were going to do. And all I'm saying to you is that $100 million could pay for the open space that half the people in this audience would like to see.
Okay. So Alan, that goes to a TIF question, which is really directed at the city.
I'm just asking your support. So you wouldn't mind then if we all went to the Department of Planning and say to them, hey, instead of applying the $100 million for the 606 extension, apply it to purchasing the General Iron property?
I think you're going to do whatever you're going to do, whether I mind it or not. So
I wanted to get your support. Okay, so the last question, okay? If I go home and contact Mike Kelly, head of the Park District, and said, Sterling Bay would agree to hand over the open space to the Chicago Park District, and for the life of the land, provide the maintenance for it. Would you agree to that?
Yes.
So I will go home and take Mike. So you said to me, I understand why Mike doesn't want to take ownership because there's a lot of expense. But I heard, and this is for the record, you guys are recording, right? That's someone from Sterling Bay who's, I didn't see who it was.
That was me, Alan.
I'm a ventriloquist.
Oh, okay. So then you, if the city would accept the land.
That was what we proposed. That's exactly what we proposed.
Okay. That you would maintain it.
They said
they're
no.
not interested in owning it.
Okay.
So my understanding is you would deed it to the Park District and you would agree for forever to maintain it, and they turned that down.
Hey, Alan, we don't want to own the park. Okay, we asked We asked the city today. We met with Mike and said, "Could you guys please take it? We'll build it." They said, "We don't want it. We can't do it."
No, but I think he probably said because he can't afford it with his budget, and that to maintain it. So I'm just trying to clarify.
We're covering the maintenance already, and so we'd have no problem covering the maintenance if somebody else owns it.
Thank you.
Hi. Hello, I'm Amy Abramson. I live in the Second Ward, and I'm a member of Friends of the North Branch Park. I have a question for Alderman Hopkins. Alderman Hopkins, you were on the Mike Nowak show on November 17th and said, and I quote, "I think it is highly unlikely that final decisions on the Lincoln Yards development will be made before the next mayor takes office. I've committed since day one that this process would take as long as it takes, and personally, I'm in no hurry. Alderman Hopkins, can we count on you for that? And will you commit right now to having another public meeting for the community, for this community? And if so, when?"
Thanks, Amy. I have said that, and I've said that all along. I've said that for the 3 years that I've been involved in this process since the North Branch Framework Plan was first proposed, numerous community hearings. I've maintained an open posture on the number of hearings that we need, and I've scheduled each one in succession. When we conclude one, we do an assessment of what the results are, what the outstanding questions are. We move forward if we need another one. So I'm going to remain committed to letting this process play out however long it takes. As I said on Mike's show, I'm in no hurry, and I'm not. I'm also not willing to delay just for the sake of delay, to intentionally slow it down for no good reason. As long as there's an ongoing dialogue, as long as there's unanswered questions that are still pending, and as long as there's new questions that are being presented, I'm going to keep this process open until we get to the point where the questions have been sufficiently answered and there seems to be something close to consensus or at least support for something like the presentation that you saw here tonight. Again, this is evolving. It's changing with every hearing, with every meeting, with every public presentation. Feedback is accepted. Changes are made. We're still doing that. I don't really know how long it's going to take. And frankly, I don't want to attach it to a political calendar. I'm the alderman today. Fortunately, I'm going to be the alderman next year. We'll have a different mayor. That's true. They'll have to make some of their own decisions. But that doesn't really have anything to do with what we're here tonight. This is a community process. You're the community. You have questions? Let's hear them. That's what we're doing. And part of my job is to assess where we're at in that process as we go forward. And when the questions have been sufficiently answered, I think it'll be clear to all of us. And I think it's also clear to all of us, we're not there tonight. So the process is ongoing. Thank you for being a part of it. I'm going to continue to be the steward of this process as long as we're doing what we're doing, which is a public vetting of a very significant redevelopment proposal.
Well, I think based on questions from the last meeting and from many of the community members here, I think many of us here believe that this whole process has been rushed and that we need to slow this down.
I differ with your opinion. It has not been rushed. As I said, I've been intimately involved with this. My staff has been involved with this. It takes up an extraordinary amount of my time and my resources for 3 years now. It may take another 3 years. I don't know. But this has not been rushed. And I think that's just something that people who are opposed to this process, and if you are, I respect that. I absolutely have no problem with the opponents here in this room. I've heard from you. I understand your reasons for being skeptical about this. I understand your reasons for not wanting this. I get that. But to say that it hasn't been an open process, to say that it hasn't been an inclusive process, or to say that it's been rushed is simply untrue. The facts of this do not jibe with that. In fact, I will go back to the story that was Kate McCarter referred to in a website that some of you might read by a local resident. It's called Our Urban Times. She wrote a story about a week ago that kind of made that accusation that this process has been rushed, it's been secret, it hasn't been transparent. In the same story, she listed all of the public meetings and hearings and opportunity for input that has characterized this process since day one. So go back and look at the story, and you'll see the accusation that gets thrown at this process doesn't match the record that has happened. We are going to continue to be open. We are going to continue to be transparent. We are going to continue to listen to all voices, all stakeholders, and require this development team to respond to the feedback that we're getting. That can only happen in the light of day, and that's where it's happening. That's why you're all here tonight. That's why this is an open public meeting. I hope everybody got in. I heard there were still some people outside the room. But this will be the beginning of the collection of feedback based on this new itineration that you've seen. We're going to repeat that as many times as necessary.
Amy, I have to speak up here because I believe I met you actually in your sister's living room.
So I would say that our questions have not been answered.
Okay. But to say that it has not been transparent or open, I think is disingenuous.
I don't think our questions, I beg to differ. I don't think our questions have been answered today or in the past. I don't think that our input has been valued. I think it's been managed. I don't think that you listened to us, and I think we're going to be needing many more public meetings in the future.
Right. Thank you. So,
clarify that. Alderman Hopkins, thank you for saying to my dad the other day that you were a big fan of mine. I do appreciate that. That's after the story came out. My name is Kate McCarter. I'm the one who was called out by Alderman Hopkins just now for what I said in the article. I called Christian Fakara and I said, hey, where are the public meetings? And you said, well, he said to me, you're welcome to host a coffee in your house with a small number of people, a private meeting. It would not be open to the press. It would not be open to other neighbors. I could fit maybe five people. That is not public. This is a privatization. That is my contention. Christian Fakara.
Let me, Kate, and you,
of
have,
course,
the right, you have the
Hopkins.
Right to respond, so thank you. But
yeah.
What Kate's referring to was an open invitation that we put out there, which actually still stands. Many people took me up on it. Yes, they were private meetings as a supplement to meetings like this. What we decided to do was basically have living room focus groups in the second ward. And I would have loved if you would have accepted the invitation to host one. We had many. It was hosted by residents of the second ward who invited their neighbors in a less formal setting to come in the living rooms over coffee and tea and meet with the architects, meet with the designers, ask them questions, pointed questions, express
right.
their support, express their opposition, and they basically function like focus groups, the kind of thing that really can't happen in a large public hearing like this one where you can't have that ongoing dialogue with the continuous feedback. They were extraordinarily valuable. Many residents took me up on doing this. It wasn't to replace this. Obviously, we're still here, so it wasn't to replace it. It was to provide a supplement for it, and it was also to give me an extra measure of accountability to Second Ward residents, to my neighbors, because this process does have a significant impact on the entire city. And I recognize that. I know I'm dealing with citywide issues here, but the people that honored me by giving me this job are my Second Ward residents. And I wanted something a little bit aside from the full, open, lengthy public process to acknowledge my relationship with the voters of my ward who gave me this job. And so that was an ability that we had to do that. That's why you were asked to do it, because you live a block away from me. So
only after I was not informed.
I'm fully able to proudly acknowledge that part of the process that we had. There's nothing suspicious about it, private living room meetings. No, it wasn't that at all. It was focus groups to continue to get feedback from the people that elected me to this office in the first place. So,
okay.
There's a difference of opinion. There's 100,000 stakeholders. In my opinion, it was a PR move of divide and conquer, obfuscation. Obviously, Alderman Hopkins has a different opinion. What does everybody else think?
Okay. Sir?
All right. Hello, Park people. Hello, Lincoln Yards team. My name is Drake Nickel. I'm a resident in Chicago. I have immediate family living all over Chicago. I'm here with my father, who is a landlord with my grandfather of a property in Bucktown, just a little over a mile away from the proposed Lincoln Yards plan. With that said, I love Chicago. I want to live in Chicago, and I want to stay here for as long as I can. That being said, in the past 3 years, Chicago has had a negative net population growth. We have lost more people in the past 3 years, with the most recent year reported being the highest number. I graduated from Lake Forest College. My brother graduated from DePaul. Our friends, our classmates, they did not move to Chicago after post-graduation. They moved to Boulder. They moved to Scottsdale. And I went to go see why. They love Scottsdale. They love Boulder. They love showing it off. They're so proud of it. And I was a little envious of what I saw. So when I see things like Lincoln Yards, something that's so attractive to me, something that's similar to the Riverwalk, where you can go sit, have a great view, buy a beer, and hang out with your friends after work, those are the things I want to show off when people come to Chicago. And that's what's going to attract people to stay here after graduation.
Thank you.
Hi. Hi, my name is Mary Lou Seidel. I'm the Director of Community Engagement for Preservation Chicago. I'm going to list a number of questions that I'll submit in writing, but I just want them to go into the record tonight that you might not have the answers right now, and then I'll end with a couple of questions that I would love to get answered today. I'm concerned about what percent of the housing is going to be guaranteed for long-term affordability and at what percent of the area median income those units will be targeted. Has there been significant and meaningful engagement with Friends of the Chicago River and other partners like the Shedd Aquarium who are already actively committed to improve the health, vitality, and accessibility to the river? I heard your thought about movable trees. That just sent me off into a little, I don't know if my brain's ready to think about movable trees, but Will, I'd love to see the written offer and the written rejection from the Chicago Park District that you offered them the land and essentially a maintenance endowment, and they turned it away. That doesn't make any sense. I used to work for the National Trust for Historic Preservation. We used to accept property all the time if it came with an endowment. If it didn't, we'd be like, that's a big deal. That's a different story. But if you offered them the property and an endowment, I can't believe they turned it away. So I'd love to see that in writing. I'm concerned as an environmentalist as well about the amount of treated lawn that will be adjacent to the Chicago River and what impact treating that will have on the water quality. I'd like to get an assessment of the tallest existing buildings within a quarter-mile radius and a half-mile radius of this site and see where that 650-foot building falls in comparison. You talked about doing a traffic study that would that looked at the number of venues Live Nation would bring in and the traffic could be handled well, but then you also said you didn't know how many venues Live Nation was going to bring in. So I'm wondering what number you based that traffic mitigation study on. I am concerned about the live mitigation no-play zone that would affect places like the Hideout and Subterranean and other live venues that currently have that. These are existing buildings, legacy businesses that are important to the city of Chicago and to the history of our community. The final question I have is, will Sterling Bay offer to help Preservation Chicago and other preservation-minded organizations within this ward in the nearby area to do an assessment of how to protect the more than 70 historic or high-character buildings within the area of this site so that future expansion, future phases will not impact the character? I think it was Andy?
Yeah, we're happy to do that.
The character of this neighborhood being a draw for the development. So will you help us keep that character intact?
100%. Okay. If you look at what we've done in Fulton Market, any opportunity we had to keep an older vintage building, we have. So.
Okay, great. That's it. Thanks.
Great. Thank you. Ma'am?
Hi, my name is Judy Mansueto, and I've lived in Lincoln Park for 26 years and have raised my family here. I'm also a member of the Friends of the North Branch Park and Nature Preserve. I have a question for Alderman Hopkins. Alderman, you have said in print, on television, and in public meetings that you support a public, contiguous, not parceled, as you're proposing, North Branch Park. Then why doesn't the TIF specifically allow for the purchase of land to create a park?
Who says it doesn't?
It wasn't in there.
Who says it doesn't?
The DPD.
We're not done with that process yet either.
Okay.
We're not done with the TIF process either, and that is part of the discussion right now. So let's not declare defeat before we're even done with this. I absolutely support the North Branch Park, and if anyone here tonight, anyone, has a suggestion, a valid suggestion, of where we get the $200 million that's needed to build it, that's really the only obstacle that remains. You've got the three aldermen that control the area.
Andy,
you want to hear this or not?
Andy!
You've got the three aldermen that are closest to the site in full support of it. You have a mayor that has basically said he doesn't support it.
Yeah.
But you have three aldermen who are fully on board with that. The challenge that remains is to find $200 million to pay for it. And we're having that discussion right now. That's part of this whole debate about what we're going to use for the TIF money. So don't declare defeat before we've even had an opportunity to parcel out a redevelopment plan and a budget for a TIF that hasn't even been approved yet. It's still part of the discussion, and it should be.
Okay. I appreciate what you just said, but I do want to know how we can get the city to make sure that there are public benefits for the people instead of just the developer. You said you supported the North Branch Park. Now you've talked about ways of funding it, or you've suggested we can find ways to fund it. But how are we going to do it now? How can we make this happen now? Alderman. That's a question to Alderman.
I don't know.
Okay.
$200 million is a substantial amount of money. The entire annual budget for the Park District's capital fund is $30 million. So it's a huge price tag, a huge ask. The organization that is behind this project right now has got some suggestions. There's some ideas that are out there, but there is no pot of $200 million that's just sitting there that nobody has discovered yet. It's a challenge, and it's really the only obstacle between the renderings that you've seen from the North Branch Park and Preserve Organization and putting that first shovel in the ground and acquiring the property, which, you know, as we all know, is privately owned, so you have to pay to get it. That's the question before us. How do we pay for it? If I had the answer, I would not be withholding that right now. I don't know where we find $200 million to pay for the park. I do know that the initial estimation for what the TIF, what the Cortland TIF could provide is $800 million. $800 million is bigger than $200 million. So clearly there's a possibility there. But all of the needs that we've discussed and all of the things that we've identified here tonight have a legitimate claim to some of that $800 million. And how that all plays out is going to be part of this ongoing dialogue, which is why we're not talking about approving anything tonight. We're still very much trying to make some of these difficult decisions and to prioritize what the public spending will be as part of this going forward. So you're asking me where we're going to find the $200 million? Ask Alderman Smith, ask Alderman Wagasback, and ask the next mayor of Chicago, because we're all going to have to be part of that answer.
What about the special assessment bond on Sterling Bay? Anybody want to answer that?
For the park?
For the park. A special assessment bond.
No.
Okay.
It's been done before. Why would it not happen this time? There's precedent.
Okay. I mean, I think the number is closer to $300 million.
No, we have not.
No.
Found
but
that
let me
number.
Just. I don't know what the environmental condition is of this. I don't. We have no idea. It looks like it glows at night. It could be a huge issue.
Well, you know,
I don't know. I'm saying it's a big number.
I think when you take a property like General Iron and you mediate it or remediate it, it's much less remediation than it would be to put a building that is going to have 7,500 residents in it. So a park doesn't need the same kind of remediation that you're talking about. Also, the city of Chicago has a real history of parks along the Chicago River. You look at La Belita, you move down to Park 571, you move to Ping Tom Park. Every 2.5 miles, there is a public park. You get to the Riverwalk, there's a public park. Then there's a 5-mile pause until you get to the Clark Play Lot. So we want a public park. We don't want parcels of land that are owned and operated by Sterling Bay.
Okay, we appreciate it.
Okay.
Ma'am.
Let me respond to that as well. Despite what you heard here tonight about the Park District being unwilling to do this, that's the response of the Park District staff, okay? And they're entitled to their opinion as well, and I think I understand why they don't want to take it on. The Park District right now there's people here from Friends of the Parks. You know this as well as I do. They're really facing some pretty serious fiscal challenges right now. They can barely pay for what they have. They're looking at layoffs. They're looking at program cuts. They're looking at deferred maintenance. It's not a good situation. So when an idea like this kind of gets, you know, thrown at them, I can understand the staff's initial reluctance. But it's not solely their decision. There's other stakeholders involved. There's a board of commissioners of the park district, and they will have something to say about this going forward. As far as I'm concerned right now, there are three viable options that remain on the table for consideration. And there's advantages and disadvantages. One of them, you heard tonight that the Park District supposedly rejected, which is to basically have a build-to-suit turnkey operation where Sterling Bay would pay to build the park and then turn it over to the Park District. I think that's still a viable option, and it deserves consideration despite the initial reluctance from the staff. The second option would be something like a hybrid model, which is actually currently in use in the Lakeshore East development. Some of you are familiar with that, where the old golf course used to be along the lakefront. And part of that plan development required a public park that is actually on land owned by the Park District. The Park District owns that land, but it's maintained and operated by the master association privately, a homeowners association that exists there. And they pay for all the costs of maintaining the park, including the dog park and some other things. So that's an option here as well. Another option could be that the Park District operates it. Sterling Bay owns it, but the Park District basically runs it and runs all the programming and treats it like any other park. They just happen to not own the land. So all of those options should be under consideration right now, and as far as I'm concerned, they are. There's advantages and disadvantages, as I said, to each of them, but I think the important thing to stress, and it's probably a lot of people here that don't necessarily agree with me, but I believe that any of those three options should be invisible to the ultimate user of the park. To the kids that are going to be playing soccer there or playing on the swings or running on the trails, whatever it is, they're not going to know the difference if it's paid for by the Park District or paid for by Sterling Bay. It's going to be a public park in function, no matter who owns it. And there's ways to ensure that. There's operating agreements, there's contractual documents, and there's ordinances. So it will have the force of law. It will not be private space that sometimes, when these guys feel like it, they'll graciously allow certain members of the community to use it. That will not, under any circumstances, be what happens with the park. It will be a park in practice, no matter which of those three options we use.
Okay. How would you enforce that ordinance, those kinds of things? How would that be enforced? For the city to manage it and for Sterling Bay to own it, how would that be done?
Through the plan development and a recorded document on the property.
So we'll put some of the points that I mentioned earlier about specifically what is codified in the plan development that's in the law department at the city records and whatnot. I think a lot of people were talking when I was reading through some of that. So we're happy to post that as well. Okay, I haven't read that article. I'm sorry.
Okay, I have one last thing to say, and then I will sit down. You know, the New York High Line funded by residents of New York, from Friends of the High Line, as well as the City of New York. And I know that the Friends of the High Line helped to pay for the maintenance of the park, and I know that the New York City contributes money to pay for the High Line. So I think the real bottom key here is the city has to stand up, the city has to buy the land, and they have to make it, because you're not talking 54 acres, you're talking 155 acres of land. You're talking maybe if you build 5,000 residents and there's two people in each resident, you're talking 10,000 more people. And the Chicago Metropolitan Agency of Planning says for every 1,000 people, there should be 4 acres of land. So already, you're not even
even close. If you're going to bring in 5,000 residents, you're taking 10,000 people. It should be 40 acres of land in this 155 parcel. So you know where we stand. We want to see it as a public park. We want to see it owned by the city, operated by the city. We want to be able to claim it for the city and the people of Chicago. Thank you.
Hi there. My name is Laura Compton. I am a resident in the 43rd Ward, and I'm an Oscar Mayer parent. My question is specific to my children. Every day, I walk my children to school. I used to walk down Webster to Oscar Mayer. And in April, my children both were hit by a car on our walk to school. Luckily, they were completely okay. 5 weeks later, a woman was hit by a car on Webster and Clifton, and she broke her arm and lacerated her face. I think that the traffic to and from the east-west areas of our city are highly impacted by this development and this space already. And my question, I have two questions specific to my children. One is, how are we going to protect our children east and west of your facility now, starting now? Because those areas, those streets are already over capacity. And the traffic, the congestion is only going to increase as the construction starts in those areas. And people are impatient, intolerant, and run through the stop signs, the inadequate stop signs on our streets. So that's my first question that I'd like you to address. And my second question...
Can I do my answer to that?
Go ahead.
So thank you for your question. I'm terribly sorry that both your children were hit by cars.
Same time. Both kids.
I'm glad that they're okay, though. I will say, we acknowledged earlier that there are traffic issues in the neighborhood already. The CDOT commissioner at a lunch a couple days ago acknowledged the spaghetti of roads around Elston and Armitage and Ashland. I think, in conversations that we've had, and you'll see some other cross-sections that we'll post online, there's been great effort to go to protect both pedestrians, bikes, and there's been a lot of attention to crosswalks. I agree with you on people that blow stop signs in this city. I've lived near the 606, and people think that just because there's a viaduct there and there's a stop sign, they don't have to stop. And I've been walking my kids around, and they've been close to being hit, too. So, I can't address the fact that people don't stop at stop signs, but... it's a question for CDOT as well, and they're going to great lengths to both in the interim phases now going through the phase of development and also in the future development, both focus on safety as well as traffic mitigation.
I think that is totally commendable, but that study and that those adjustments are happening in that specific area on the map. And my problem is that the traffic coming into and out of those areas is what the concern is for me and for my children.
Just on that note, there is, I know we have, I don't know if we have the slide on here, but as part of a study, there are at least 20 intersections in and around the neighborhood that either don't exist or need to be modified and addressed. Fred, you may know.
Yeah. To add to that is we're making a lot of improvements to enhance pedestrian safety, whether in terms of new signalization or improvements to the crosswalks or countdown timers. But I think another key to this whole thing is what this development will happen with the ultimate development and the infrastructure improvements is completing the street the network of the streets throughout the area. Right now, there is discontinuity in the north, south, and east-west direction. As you saw in the presentation, there is going to be a lot of connectivity to help distribute that traffic. So while some of the concentration of traffic is on Webster, there will be opportunities through Dominic Extension, the connection of Kingsbury to Southport, and so forth, to help divert the traffic away from some of those highly concentrated areas.
Sounds good. So just to be clear, I now walk from across both Armitage and Webster, both of those east-west streets are problematic. On to my second question, I mentioned I'm an Oscar Mayer mother of two children. Oscar Mayer is already at capacity, and we are the school that is going to be receiving the children for Lincoln Yards. And I want to understand what is being done to work with our CPS, our principal, and the other CPS schools to accommodate for the influx in children that are going to be expected from this facility.
So that's a very good question, and we've been producing a number of estimates on the public school children who would live within Lincoln Yards, and we've been working very closely with CPS officials to both kind of confirm that our methodology was appropriate. We've gotten their support, and we're continuing to work very closely with them to make sure that they're on board and that our plans fit in with their plans for capital construction and everything else.
From what I understand from my LSC and from my principal, those conversations are not happening with her and with the LSC's involvement, and that they're not prepared properly to accept the influx of children.
So I think we have had conversations with leadership at CPS on this specific issue. If that's not trickling down to Oscar Mayer and to leadership at the school, I don't think that's a question that we can answer, and I'd encourage you to go to leadership of CPS. We will bring it up again.
I think you need, as a community member, like you said, that all of you are 1 mile within the area of this facility. I think that all of you should take a vested interest in making sure that our public schools are ready and able to accommodate these children.
We've started those conversations. We will continue the conversations that we're having with CPS. But my kids are younger than we're talking about here.
Thank you.
One?
Ma'am. My name is Alex McGee. I was born in Lakeview. I live across the street from Future Lincoln Yards. I won't ask questions that other people have already asked. A lot of neighborhood people here want to ask questions. So what I will do is hold up your signs for support, please. We support a public park in or around Lincoln Yards. Hold your signs up high.
That's great to see, because we also support the concept of the North Branch Preserve.
Thank you. We look forward to continuing to work with you to make that a reality. Thanks.
Great.
Good evening. My name is Tom Tresser. I'm the lead organizer of the TIF Illumination Project, which has been investigating and exposing the hyperlocal impacts of tax increment financing districts since 2013. And we've been called to present at 73 public meetings in front of over 6,300 people. Now, the most pressing issue our work addresses is that we call out the question of who plans what for who, and who pays for those plans, and who profits from them. In the communities across Chicago, people understand that they are on the receiving end of a bunch of bad plans, and the people who profit from them. For example, Ari Emanuel, the mayor's brother, and his stake in Live Nation, where he is a board member. Now, what we have found over the years is consistent with reporting from the Chicago Reader, the Chicago Reporter, and other grassroots organizations fighting for economic justice. And as I say, we see a small group of connected developers calling the shots all over the city in order to construct massive projects that often require public subsidies that rob our vital public services of resources and which drive out poor and working class families from neighborhoods they've lived in for decades, if not generations. It's happening right now. Now, there is zero meaningful public input for how Chicago was and is being planned and developed, this meeting notwithstanding. So what we hear now is another massive construction project in a market that's getting overcrowded with retail and condos, with virtually no regard for what the city really needs on an organic, justice-based lens. What we need is more public infrastructure, more public schools, more health clinics, more libraries, more mass transit, and about double the acreage of open land and public parks that we now enjoy. Now, come on, ladies and gentlemen, let's be real. Chicago is justifiably called Two Chicagos because of the lavish resources spent on the whiter, richer part of town and the historic neglect and abuse heaped on our non-white communities. Now, this proposed TIF that we've looked at for Cortland and the Chicago River, which is to subsidize development spurned by your development here at Sterling Bay, is the worst example of public policy insults that this process and TIFs bring to our city. At a time of terrible stress and duress for our communities of color, it is unsupportable and immoral to deliver $500 to $800 million in public subsidies for the Lincoln Yards project. The development is bloated beyond understanding. Amazon HQ2 is not coming here. So why do we need so many of these office towers with 650 feet and more and residential towers that you're proposing? But if you want to build it, I guess you're going to build it. But don't think that your ill-conceived plans demands a reflexive gift of hundreds of millions of dollars of public money to make it work. We need that money elsewhere in the city. For more parks, for more neighborhood schools, for special ed teachers, for librarians at our elementary schools, and for job training for our young people. My friends, we have seen all this before. A bloated project that gets rushed through City Hall while we, the residents and taxpayers, protest in vain. So, what can we do? My friends, the Civic Lab is offering a workshop on December 15th, TIF 101, Organizing for Economic Justice, at the Loyola School. We'll give you $10 off, and we'll donate $10 to the Friends of the North Branch Parks if you use the promo code BRANCH at checkout at www.powerinstitute.us. We've been passing out the flyers. I hope you have one. All right, we're going to have to get smart and get organized to get the city we deserve. And this is a very good start here, my friends. So please join us and fight this overstuffed, unbalanced projects like the Lincoln Yards project and fight for resources for our underserved and disinvested communities. Thank you.